Here in Wisconsin, we're extremely fortunate, I think, to have thousands, hundreds of thousands of acres of forest land. They're great for many, many things. They are also, among them, a little more recently, have been looked at as a source for bioenergy. So we'll talk about our forests today. We'll talk about sustainability of our forests and bioenergy with two guests. John Greenler, back again, director of the Education and Outreach Program for the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center. John, great to have you back.
Good to be here. Thanks, Larry.
Tom Gower back, professor of forest ecosystem ecology at the UW-Madison. Tom, great to have you with us as well.
Good to be back as well, Larry.
Appreciate it very much. Tom, we recently did a program about Wisconsin state and national forests, but those are just the official forests. How much of Wisconsin really is forested?
About 45 to 50%, depending upon the numbers that you use. So over half.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Around half, yeah. It is amazing. And the other amazing statistic that people typically don't recognize is most of that, again, about half of it's owned by non-industrial private landowners. So people like me and you. It's not a big timber company. It's not the National Forest.
What benefits do we already enjoy? Let's go back to kind of the beginning in a way. What benefits do we already enjoy from our Wisconsin forests? What goods and services do they already provide?
Oh, they provide so many, Larry, as you well know. They are home for lots of species of plants and animals that are really we depend on, both for aesthetics as well as recreation, i.e. hunting.
Yep.
The soil and water protection, which is really quite critical when you think about the importance of tourism in northern Wisconsin and to have those lakes with nice clean water because the trees are filtering that water before it goes in. And then, of course, it is just right behind agriculture as far as economic importance in the state. There are a number of counties where either primary forest growers or industries that have spun off from that is the main employer for the state. So just, you know, innumerable benefits.
John, in general, what qualities does a crop or material need to have to be considered as a potential biofuel?
Yeah, well, I think looking towards the future, there's a lot of interest in the research of GLBRC looking at the use of kind of fibrous plant material. So moving away from using grain, such as corn, for making ethanol, and instead looking at things like corn stover as a possibility, forest residues, switchgrass grown on marginal lands. So it's really this fundamental kind of shift in biomass that we're looking at so we can use basically the leaves and stalks and stems as compared to the seeds or grains.
Yeah.
And clearly, there's a lot of biomass in those woods. We want to make sure that if we're going to be taking that material, that we're doing it in a way that is sustainable and is going to really not compromise all the other benefits that we receive from those woodlands.
Yeah, absolutely. And, well, Tom, what role might they play then? I mean, could the Wisconsin forests play a pretty big role? Or
I don't think any one biofuel feedstock is going to be the silver bullet. And I think people need to realize that each will contribute in their own way in some small amount to a modest amount. But the estimates that have been worked up so far suggest that you might be able to produce enough, let's say, fuel or electricity to meet 5 to 10% of the state's demand.
But that's a pretty good chunk.
It's not bad. It's a good start. There's some other things that we could do to improve that. But the thing you always realize or need to realize is you start competing with other uses for that fiber. And I think that's what makes it really complicated. Mm-hmm. And probably intellectually fun to try to figure out how do we sort of maximize or optimize all the different uses of wood and still maintain or protect our services that we talked about earlier.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. John Greenler and Tom Gower are our guests today as we talk about our Wisconsin forests and sustainability and bioenergy as it relates to our forests. You can join in with your questions about bioenergy, about our forest land. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. 642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can also go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show for some questions, or maybe you've got some photos you want to put up as well. What about the, John, advantages, disadvantages of using wood? Tom got into it a little bit, whether it's logs or harvest residue, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I was mentioning earlier, kind of the diversity of different types of, you know, fibrous plant material that we could be using in industry, we call this cellulosic material. And in the center, we've actually been spending a lot of time looking at how do we process that material first into simpler sugars that can then be fermented or processed in different ways into ethanol or other biofuels as well. And it's clear that we really need to have kind of a diversity of processing, processes to be able to break that material down. And so especially when you look at woody material versus, you know, more grass-like material like switchgrass or corn stover, that we're going to need to treat it in a different fashion just to kind of loosen that material up such that the enzymes or catalysts that we would use to be able to make the biofuels can really kind of get in and do their job.
Yeah. So how do we loosen it up? I mean, that's what you're working on, I assume.
It's one of the areas that GLBRC has a whole significant suite of projects involved in. Yes.
Yeah. Well, we'll take some calls. Steve in Madison, we'll give you a chance. Steve, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hey, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on. One comment that I would like to make about the amount of forested land in Wisconsin. A lot of what we perceive today as a forest is really kind of an overgrown savanna ecosystem. And a lot of these, like right here in Dane County, on the Lakeshore Nature Preserve, Arboretum, City Parks, and Madison, and many of these sites would really benefit from, you know, a very good forest management plan that opened up significant areas, and using that wood then too as a heat form or some type of energy source would be great. And I even think to the point where coarse woody debris, where we've been taught laying in these ecosystems is good for the forest, but in the savanna ecosystems, I've heard archaeologists say that there was hardly any wood in those laying down in the ground as the Native Americans would come through these and collect the wood and really regulate that, you know, through fire and herbivory. So anyways, I'll just take, any reaction to that comment. There, the point is how this would really help with a lot of our restoration efforts for the savanna ecosystems.
All right. Tom Gower, let's go to you.
Yeah, actually, it's ironic he brings that up. Our senior capstone course had a project. They get a parcel of land, and they have to write a management plan for it. And many of the forests in the southern part of the state have been pretty beat up. You know, they've got undesirable tree species, understocked. And there's a really growing interest, as the caller just mentioned, of restoration and creating some fairly endangered ecosystems. And probably one of the greatest roles that bioenergy could play is it would give the landowner the economic incentive to basically just cut everything off and start all over again. Mm-hmm. And so you would likely increase biodiversity. You could go to a prairie, you could go to an oak savanna, and also get that material off, because right now there's just not a market for it. So that's a really interesting point, and it's certainly one mechanism to sort of really do some significant restoration.
Yeah. John, comment?
Yeah, just one thing I could mention is the Department of Energy several years ago published a study called the Billion Ton Study, basically looking at where can all this material come from. And clearly the giveaway is, you know, that there's probably about 1.4 billion tons of this fibrous material that we should be accessing, highly diversified, as we've talked about. But actually, you know, a significant, fraction of that is urban wood residues, clearing of forest for fire management. So I think, you know, this is, there's a lot of opportunities there in terms of where this material would come from.
Let's go to Pete in Glendale next. Pete, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
What I'd like to just bring up here is the whole concept of biochar. I think this is something that is terribly neglected in the discussion. Biochar allows you to produce wood gas, which, if you go back to World War II, was used to fuel automobiles. Wood gas is the product that is primarily hydrogen that is given off when you char wood, which is essentially turning wood into charcoal. In addition to the wood gas, the charcoal itself is an extremely stable form of carbon. It has been known to sit in fire pits from ancient times, thousands of years. It is extremely stable. It's not decomposing, and it has the ability to absorb more carbon, which is to say you could take this charcoal and you can use it around the perimeter of farm fields. You can use it in hazardous waste fills to absorb some of the nasty stuff that's in there. This is a win-win situation. Please discuss. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling. Well, Tom Gower, we'll turn to you first.
I'll just follow up and say that it's what he points out is one of the key messages that I would like to get across in this discussion is I think it's absolutely essential that any of these processes, any of the uses, we use a whole system analysis. And by that, I mean we look at the biological system, we look at the industrial system that's used to make any final product, and the geologic system, and we do a complete accounting of the energy going in and the energy going out. And I think when we do that, we really are moving much more rapidly to sustainable forest management. And I could give you a couple of examples of what happens when you don't do that. But the caller has mentioned biochar, and in some areas it may make sense. In other areas, it may not make sense. So again, I just would really encourage all the listeners and to think about this in a whole system way, because when you start transporting stuff long distances, you end up using a lot more fuel than you're getting.
Yeah, absolutely. John?
Yeah, I think, ditto on what Tom was saying. And the biochar story is quite an interesting one. There's a lot of history of biochar being used in South America, by native peoples. And it clearly has, I think, great benefits, especially with certain types of soils. And I think, what Tom was saying in terms of really doing that full analysis of how much energy needs to go in versus how much energy or fuel do you get out. So,
and we're going to talk some more about that with our guests right after we take a quick look at the news. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. So happy to have you listening in here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. And with my guests today, we're taking a look at Wisconsin forests, the sustainability of those forests, taking a look at bioenergy and its role, perhaps in future role in our forest land. John Greenler, Director of Education and Outreach Programs for the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center, GLBRC. Tom Gower, Professor of Forest Ecosystem Ecology at the UW-Madison, our guests. And they're involved in work in the GLBRC about our forest land and bioenergy. So great to have them along. Certainly, if you have questions or comments, I hope you'll join in. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. And you can also go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show and post a question or a comment there. Let's talk about managing our forest lands a little bit right now. There's a lot of debate, I think, about how we're going to use our forest land. And I don't know, Tom, you want to
Sure.
take a crack at that?
So when we think about carbon and carbon management, there's really sort of two schools of thought. And one is to use forests to store carbon, because the biomass of the tree, the organic matter, is 50% carbon. So the bigger that tree gets, the more carbon it's taken out of the atmosphere and storing it in those trees. And there's a large group of people that feel like, well, forests are king. They can't, corn, soybeans, nobody can trump, a forest. A forest up in northern Wisconsin can hold maybe 150, 200 tons of carbon. Ones out west, as much as 1,000 tons of carbon per hectare. So they're really good at that. But on the other side of things is sort of using the forest to produce feedstock for biofuels. And to do that, That objective takes you in a totally different direction than carbon storage, because what you want is to manage that forest at its thriftiest stage of growth. And that is, for our forest here in Wisconsin, 30, 40 years. They actually reach a maximum in growth, and then they slow down to the point at old growth, they're hardly growing at all. So there's these two very competing schools of thought as to how you manage the forest. And I'll just add one other thing that's related to our just recent research is that we're looking at forests in Wisconsin. They were all clear-cut at the turn of the century, right? If you've ever seen pictures, it was a landscape up there of missing trees. And so all of those forests now are past that peak curve and starting to decline in growth. And our model simulation suggests that if we were to cut more frequently, we can get that age structure back to its desirable age structure of maximum productivity. And we can increase wood production by 30% in the upper, probably Great Lakes states of Michigan, Minnesota, and Wisconsin, because they all sort of have that same unique stand history. So there's a technique where you don't need any new land. You simply manage it for its maximum productivity. So that's an interesting sort of silviculture tool that we could use to increase biofuel production.
But there would be people who would be against that?
Sure. I mean, there's lots of people, including myself, who enjoy walking through a forest and seeing an older forest. But there are different harvesting techniques, such as selective removal, where we can maintain some of those physical and visual attributes that we find so appealing as we walk through a forest, with a selective harvest as opposed to a clear cut. So, yeah, there's some probably, we will probably get some people calling in that think that would be a very bad idea.
Yeah. Well, you're talking about sustainability there. I mean, is that sustaining the forest, doing it that way?
It is sustainable if it's done correctly and you leave some residue on the site. And sustainability, it's a really complicated issue because we think about, you know, all of the services that we're managing forests for. And let me just give you one example of what happens when we think we're doing the right thing. For example, the Shawamigan-Nicolet National Forest, that's the forest up in northern Wisconsin. It produces somewhere around third or fifth most wood of any national forest in the U.S. And most people would be surprised by that. It's also one of the most litigated forests. Every harvest is usually under appeal. And there are probably well intentions of preserving those forests, and that's to be applauded. But what happens is, well, if the wood's not coming from there, it's coming from someplace else. And so you get scenarios such as the one that we studied, where you get wood being harvested from northern British Columbia and being transported and sold in a Home Depot station in southern Georgia. And the transportation emissions from that far off weigh any benefit of preserving the land. So, you know, there's lots of examples like that, and that's why I enjoy doing this. It's intellectually very challenging to figure out how do you maximize for all the goods and services that we as humans need from forests. And it's not as simple as you might think.
Okay. Well, Christy in Madison has a question or a comment for you guys. Hi, Christy.
Hi. I was wondering if your guests have heard of a new treatment that could improve biofuel yield. Excuse me. Los Alamos, New Mexico, U.S. researchers say they've found a key for unlocking energy potential from non-edible biomass materials such as leaves, stalks, and switchgrass. This just came out June 25th. They say that the scientists at the Department of Energy's Los Alamos National Laboratory has found a way of pre-treating those, and they're able to pre-treating the materials that you're using, and they've been able to hang on just a second. I'm sorry, I have a little bit of cold. But anyway, they have significantly reduced the tightness of the cellulose network and left it more open to conversion to sugar by enzymes, and five times what they can do right now. And I was just wondering if your guests are aware of that.
Yeah, John, let's turn to you, John Greenler.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I know the paper that you're referring to, and I'm actually glad to report that that work was in part in collaboration with researchers that are a part of the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center.
Right.
Actually, in this situation, they're at Michigan State University. And this is a major area of research for us in terms of how, you know, once again, it kind of comes back to a little bit of what I was talking earlier about how to break up that material such that, you know, we can then convert it more easily into fuels. And you know, there are a number of different pretreatments which are being considered. We're looking actually at one significantly called ammonia fiber expansion, and it looks like it has great potential both in terms of you know, actually coming up with a good product at the other end, but also of great interest to us is the energy efficiency of the process once again, and the efficiency in terms of the materials that we need. So, for example, the ammonia that's used in this process can be recycled. It's a fairly closed loop system. And actually the ammonia, a little bit of nitrogen that remains is very useful kind of further down the pipeline in terms of the synthesis of those biofuels. So this is work that's in part being done at Bruce Dale's lab at Michigan State University. So yeah, great to bring that up. Thank you.
Thank you. Chris and Madison, let's turn to you next. Hi, Chris.
Good afternoon, guys. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you.
Good. Thank you.
I have a conundrum for you. I have a piece of land that I own down in southwest Dane County, and I was contacted by the county about a year ago. They're interested in doing a stream bank restoration project on a portion of the property. There's a large stream that flows down through the bottom portion of the property, and the project will entail regrading the stream banks, planting some grass in there, and notably cutting out about 4 acres worth of box elder trees. I'm excited by the potential to do this, but I've got one sticking point that I'm insisting on with the county in my negotiations with them. As I've observed them over the past few years coming down the valley towards me, their practice has been to basically bulldoze all the unwanted trees into a big heap and burn them on site. And from a carbon management standpoint, this makes me crazy. You know, it's just taking all that potential energy and sending it up into the sky in a big dirty fire. So I'd like to do something better with that wood. One notion that we've considered is to chip it and send it off to a power plant, but we're having a tough time identifying a suitable contractor to do that work. So this is really where the rubber meets the road. We've got all this unwanted wood, and I want to do something responsible with it. What would you recommend?
Your point is directly related to my earlier comment on systems analysis. And when the senior capstone students looked at using this DNR property, it was only 10 miles from campus. We quickly, you know, came to the realization you can't transport wood very far before you start using more energy than's contained in the wood. So, you know, you might chop it up and use it for firewood locally, but probably the closest facility is down along the Mississippi River, Cassville.
Yeah.
And you'd actually be doing more harm than good trying to transport it down there. So use it for firewood, chip it up for landscaping, but thumbs up for the stream bank restoration. It's great stuff.
Okay.
All right.
Can I throw a follow-on question?
Sure.
That's frustrating because we've got all this energy sitting there, right? Where do you see this going? Will there be better options for that in 5 or 10 years?
John has some comments on that.
We're working on that. Stay tuned. I guess, you know, this is clearly there's a lot of these types of residue materials that are out there, and a lot of our research is focused on trying to develop the technology to be able to take advantage of that material and unlock that energy, which is really critical for us. The other thing I just did want to comment on is it's worth recognizing the carbon that is in that material that's clearly going to be released in the atmosphere, if you burn it, that's all carbon that came from the atmosphere. So through photosynthesis by those trees, you know, what was CO2 in the atmosphere became plant matter. You're returning it, you know, back to the atmosphere. So unfortunate that that we're not able to take advantage of the energy, but in terms of, you know, of the carbon, it's all kind
of neutral.
It's a neutral, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And turning to Ron in Blooming Grove. Hi, Ron. Thank you for calling.
Thanks. This might be a partial solution to the previous caller about how to use the trees that are there. what is whole tree harvest and how does it work in other locations? Can we do it in Madison? One example I'd heard of, which probably isn't the real thing, was back in the 30s, the Drouse Dust Bowl Depression era, a landowner farmer went out to his woods and would chop down one tree a day, I think, to feed his cattle. And once they got used to it, they would come running because that was the only edible forage available. All the grass and the pasture stuff had been dried up and eaten up and burned up by the drought. Is it possible to fell those trees along that guy's stream so they fall out into pasture and then let the cattle or sheep or goats or wild deer eat all the leaves and little twigs that they care to eat and then harvest the rest of the tree for firewood? Whether we can ever make it economical to haul it to a power plant to make electricity might not work out, but you know, you could harvest those. Maybe the neighbor a mile down the road would like to cut up what's left of his trees to have firewood to heat their house during the winter. The idea of survival rations, using trees for survival rations, is relevant right now along the Gulf Coast of the U.S. and on all over Texas. If farmers there have any woodlots that need to be thinned, they may be able to save their cattle herds by selectively harvesting whole trees. Just drop them in the woods, let the cattle eat all the leaves and twigs they can stand to survive during the severe drought and famine in Texas. A different slight example is years ago my mother bought two goats to eat the poison ivy on her place. This was mainly a wide hedgerow along her driveway, and she figured the goats were cheaper than poisons or hiring teenagers to come in and cut it out by hand. The whole tree harvest, how could that be integrated into a sustainable forestry, sustainable energy system?
Oh. Tom, what do you think?
Well, let me first just address what I think he's asking for, what is a whole tree harvest. And that is basically a conventional harvest. You take the stem up to some certain height or minimum diameter, and then that's used for pulpwood or saw timber or whatever. A whole tree harvest, you typically are taking everything except the foliage. So you're taking the tops, and that really constitutes about 35% of the total biomass and the upper portion of the stem that's not harvested as well as all the branches. So that's what a whole tree harvest is. It's an extremely bad idea to start taking the foliage and using that for, let's say, fiber production because it has 3 to 4 times nitrogen concentration or nutrient concentration of the wood. So you start taking very little biomass off of a tree, i.e. foliage, and you're starting to take a large fraction of the nutrients off. So removing foliage for harvesting is a bad idea. As far as animals grazing on it here, yeah, my guess is here in Wisconsin, the grass is a lot more palatable than the tops of trees in Texas. Maybe if they had deciduous trees, but they probably have a bunch of spiny evergreen oaks and pines and conifers, and I don't think that's going to be too palatable to the cows. So, you know, box elder's dilemma.
John, any comment?
Boy, it sounds like goat territory to me. Browsers, you know, they'll go for that.
Scottish Highland cows, bring them in.
Yep. Yeah, I don't think, you know, the Holsteins that predominate are going to be able to go very far.
You probably wouldn't want to drink that milk.
No. We have, we just had a show the other day where someone called in and was commenting on the use of sheep and goats. Actually, in California, there are herds of them that are put out, and the city and the cities use them for controlling buckthorn-like materials.
Definitely.
Because they'll eat it.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's amazing. You can join in, too, by the way. We have some open lines to get you on pretty quickly here at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. An email from Mark. Is there any little spot that the loggers of old missed? I would love to see how it looks today.
There's a few tiny spots. I know there's a place up near Trout Lake where there's some old cathedral pines. There's a few out at Governor Dodge, old pines, and they really are quite spectacular. There's other places outside the state where it's really quite inspirational to go. I can think of one place in North Carolina, just these 10 and 12 foot diameter tulip poplar and eastern hemlock. unfortunately, the tops are starting to get broken out, natural sort of degradation. Yeah. But they really are. It's a glimpse into our past as to what these forests look like. Porcupine Mountains up in the north are another good example.
UP.
Yep. Yeah, that's a fairly large tract. And Sylvania is another big tract.
Yeah. And I've spent a lot of time in the Shawamigan National Forest, and every once in a while you'll come on a single pine that been there a lot longer than everybody else.
Yes.
And it really is almost inspiring to see.
Yeah, but a trip to Sylvania or Porcupines would probably be the closest to really see what the forest looked like prior to European settlement.
Caller wanted to tell the man with the trees to be cut that box elders are often used at home as home heating fuel, so there might be local people there that would be happy to come gather it if it's accessible.
Sure.
Yeah.
So another way to use it. And we were talking a little earlier, you were doing some research for, you know, I'm thinking about it on the other end, how we use materials and products. You mentioned a magazine, for example, that publishes.
Yeah. We did a really interesting study with four companies, and the one was a timber producer that made dimensional lumber. Another was a publisher. Another was a paper company, Store Enso, right up in Wisconsin Rapids. And we did what we call a life cycle analysis. So we looked at how much carbon was released to make this Time magazine, a weekly magazine, and InStyle, it's a fashion monthly magazine, as well as Dimensional Lumber. And one of the things that was quite surprising is that for the publication of Time magazine, as well as InStyle magazine, about week in and week out, there was 40% surplus production of magazines than what was actually being consumed. And it was presumably a scale of economics that once you crank the printers up, you just keep printing a bunch out on the off chance that there's some newsworthy item that will sell out that magazine on the newsstands for that week. But it's hard to believe that that's sustainable. It certainly is not good sustainable management. And again, if you do that whole system analysis, you start revealing these things. And I'm a big believer that increasing our efficiency in both the biological and industrial side of things may go further than the biofuels. I mean, there's just so many inefficiencies that we can identify and actually remedy that will reduce our fossil fuel consumption. So I think that's a really important part of the overall sustainability issue.
Yeah, I'll just, you know, echo that in terms of, I think it's clear to folks who are involved in sustainable renewable energy that just in general, if we don't really become much more efficient, we're just never going to be in the game. That we really, you know, that's the low-hanging fruit, so to speak. There's a lot of ways that we could easily become much more efficient, and we really need to keep a sharp eye on that.
We were talking about this on a show not long ago that dealt with hybrid cars and so forth. And my wife has a Toyota Prius, and it shuts off. You know, when it's when you come to a stop sign, it'll shut off or you slow down. And someone was talking about the technology for the new cars that they're working on, so that even if it's not a hybrid, that you come to a stop sign, they're working on a process to get them to shut off and then start up again when you press the gas.
Yeah, it all adds up.
And just in the last minute or so that we got, maybe you could go over again a little bit about what the research is that's going on at GLBRC in relation to this.
Yeah, so Great Lakes Bioenergy, we're really looking at how can we take this fibrous material and be able to produce sustainable biofuels, especially liquid transportation fuels, cars, trucks, planes, et cetera. And so, you know, we have major areas of research. The first is plants. So, you know, can we look at varieties of plants you know, that are going to be easier to break down, to be able to convert. Then the whole area of processing, which I've mentioned earlier, in terms of being able to take that fibrous material, loosen it up, get it into simple sugars that we can then use for making fuels. Ethanol is one option, but we're also looking at the ability, for example, to make a biofuel type, material product from that as well. And then clearly that whole fuel synthesis. And then finally, we have, and this is where Tom fits in, we have a very large area of research looking at sustainability. How does this play out, in our cropland, in our woodland? What does it look like if we scale this up, nationally in terms of energy and carbon, et cetera?
Well, guys, thank you so much for being with us today. The time flew by. John Greenler, Director of the Education and Outreach Programs of the GLBRC. Tom Gower, Professor of Forest Ecosystem Ecology at the UW-Madison. I'm sure we'll be talking more about this. Thank you for listening. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.